Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 4 of Webinars Unfiltered, where we take your questions and answer them from our own point of view from the sales and marketing world, specifically from here at Workcast and the experience that we have of our time here of running webinars, both for our own customers and for these ones here, our marketing series. Today I have with me Rachel, our sales and marketing director. We have Chris Hopper as well, our sales development manager. I did that in the last one, Azelle Hopper. I stumble over your title. And then obviously me as well. I'll be hosting today, and I am the senior marketing manager here at Workcast. So say hi, everyone.
Hi.
Welcome back. Hello. You're all happy to be
here.
How
are we doing today?
Great. Thanks for asking, Rachel. another glorious summer's day.
Yeah, it is. It is a hot, hot one.
Yes.
I'm not complaining. It's beautiful.
Very toasty. Let's not jinx it for everyone else in the UK.
And great. The US, everywhere.
And the US, everywhere. I know everyone will be happy for some rain at some point. I'm going to be British and state the garden
needs
the water.
Oh, no. No, I'm sick of cutting my grass. I could do with no rain. Just stick with the sun. Dry it out.
The sun will help it grow, Rachel.
I don't want it to grow. It's a lot of work.
Back to the real work at hand, answering this question. Okay, so the question we have today is, we're having our first webinar, and bear with me, everyone, this one's a little bit lengthy. We're having our first webinar this year as a company, and there's a split on the exec team regarding how it should be presented. Some people are saying a webinar is almost always done like a conference call, while others are saying it needs to look like an interactive TED talk with a whiteboard or green screen, and the presenters are standing up when talking. We don't have the space to present on a whiteboard, nor do we have a green screen. My thinking on this is that it's our first webinar and we shouldn't overcomplicate production with lapel mics and green screens. Also, most webinars look like conference calls. Also, this person has a lot of alsos. Also, it'd be weird to attend a webinar where the host is standing up in front of a classroom, especially if that room is pretty much empty. Can understand that. Our VP insists, quotation marks, do it right the first time and make it look like a TED talk, as if that will boost our legitimacy. Keep in mind, our audience on this will be small. And that's the end of the question. So it sounds like this person is at their wit's end, not really sure what to do at this point. So let's just ask both of you.
Yeah.
First thoughts on this question.
Well,
you go, Hopper.
Well, my first thought was, if it's the first one, they're very overcomplicating the whole process. So they might be getting themselves a bit off-putting for any future ones. The first one, you just want to be trying to learn to be a bit more comfortable behind the camera to get, like, make sure like your audio and visual checks are all sound. Just making sure you actually deliver the information correctly instead of focusing on a lot of like the whole production value. Because ultimately, people are coming for the content. They're not really coming for like the value of the production line. They want the content to be relevant, to be effective. And if you're focusing primarily on the content, like the rest of it will come into play. The more seasoned you get with like running webcasts and webinars, so you'd be a lot more efficient in that process. But ultimately, just first and foremost, get used to like the presenting, because that's ultimately where the value will be at the first thought. That's my take anyway. That's what I would tell someone who's just starting out.
Yeah, I think it depends on the confidence of the speakers as well. Obviously, we don't know a lot of the this person hasn't mentioned the experience of the team. Are they kind of seasoned speakers? Are they not? Is this new? Obviously, someone is definitely pushing for kind of being all bells and whistles production, which isn't a bad thing. But to attest to what you've just said, Chris, it does take quite a lot of planning and involvement. So whoever's wrote this, I do think they sound a little bit nervous, but again, it'll come down to budget. But could you go to an agency, or could you go to a project, an agency that who could project manage something like this, if this is something that they want to do? I think there's arguments for and against both kinds, if I'm completely honest, and it could actually be, it could be fair to try both out Do your first one really simple, do the second one as more of a TED talk and see what you get. Because the most important thing is the response and the sort of the reporting and analytics that you'll get from your audience members. Are you providing them value? That is the main thing. You guys have to enjoy it, but you've got to think about the value that you're providing to the audience, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, both great points there. I think 100% it should be about the content, but for this person specifically, I think it's almost like stripping it right back to be like, what exactly are you all wanting from this webinar?
What are you trying to achieve?
What are you trying to achieve? Because at the moment, as you've both said, these are two, I'd say, quite different things that are being asked for. One is asking for like almost similar to what we're doing now. You just want a webcam, your speakers. We could screen share if we wanted to right now, but we're not doing that for this webinar. But the other option sounds almost like what we would call a webcast, which we have talked about previously on other episodes episodes of Webinars Unfiltered, which
love
is
webisodes. We need to use that.
Maybe we should rebrand this to webisodes. But no, yeah, like webcasts are more technical, more polished, but usually used, if I'm correct me if I'm wrong, Rachel, Chris, RTMP streaming for that. Would be studio based, and that does sound a little bit like what your VPs are asking for. But completely understand, if it's the first webinar you're doing, it's very much like test the waters. You don't want to chuck a lot of money at this if you're not sure, as you said, Rachel, what will work, what won't work. And even if you do a simple setup like this initially, it will help you get used to whatever platform you're using. It will help you boost your confidence a little bit if it's your first webinar that you're running, as you've said, Rachel, as well. And I just think it'll take the pressure off of you a little bit, because it sounds like you are stressed. Which webinars are already stressful without this level of almost micromanagement, I would say.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's about it. The main thing is, to, in all fairness, is that they have put this out for discussion before making any decisions, because it's everyone is very happy within a forum environment to give their opinion, shall we say. So I think it's good that you've kind of took this approach, or the person has took this approach, because getting ideas, it helps you think about things that you wouldn't think about just with you and your internal team either. That's it. Internally, we as a sales and marketing team do tend to speak to our other departments about certain things, because it just used to, they sometimes see things from a different perspective, which really helps. So I definitely think asking for advice and things is kind of the bigger thing. What I would also suggest as well is potentially looking researching for examples on both examples, research for examples on both formats, and then kind of taking it to the group of people who are doing it and saying, look, this is this example, this is that example, what audience were they targeting, what were the reporting and analytics like, or what looked or felt better. The other thing that you've got to think about as well is, and I appreciate the whole TED talk setup, you know, depending on, if you do it well, your brand is represented very professionally. It looks great. But again, you have to have the confidence prior to deliver something like that, very stellar and very slick. So that's what you've got to remember. You kind of your brand integrity, you don't want to kind of damage that by kind of botching it. So that's another thing I would think about.
Yeah, I think they're very expensive to run as well if you want a high-end production value, like something like that for your first one. So if you're wanting something like a TED talk, which is going to be multi-cameras, a complete visual experience, so to say, for your attendees, it can absolutely look incredible. It can look slick. It can look polished. It can make your brand really look grade one. I mean, if you're coming out there with a really polished TED talk style event, you're going to get people with eyes on you. But if it's your first one, and
you don't have the right people
to spend that? That as well, are you willing to spend all that money to get that high production value for something that you're not sure about the outcomes because you haven't really done them before?
It depends as well what industry we're talking about here, because what we think or what may be expensive to one industry may actually be pennies to another. We have a lot of our financial investment institutions who do these all of the time. But then we have smaller clients who prefer to just do more webinar style based because it is more of a budget friendly option, depending again on budgets. So yeah, it would be interesting to know kind of the industry that these were in as well, actually.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with that. And to tack on as well, I think the time scale available to you to build this off.
Yes.
Because if you're running a webcast, I'm going to say webcast, your version of Tag Talk here, mm-hmm. You're going to have to find a location for that.
Yeah.
You're going to have to book that out. You've got the cost of the venue there. Then you've got to make sure your provider, if you're working with a provider to run that, is available on that date to come and support you. If you're doing it yourself, do you have people in your team who are knowledgeable enough to run that as well? Whereas yeah. I would personally say setting up a webinar like this, you can do very, very quickly if you need to. Because mm-hmm. At that point, all you need to do is set up your webinar, kind of like we've done today, and work on the WordCast platform. It takes 2 minutes to set up your basic webinar that you can go and add to later on down the line. And then all you need to do after that is confirm your speakers, get a rough agenda that you want to run through, and you are good to go, really. With a webcast, it takes, I would like to say, quite a long time. We should get Emma from our PMO team, our project management team, on this. Yeah,
I was going to say, because being devil's advocate, once you can nail a webcast, as long as preparation is key, as with anything, and as long as you've done your research, you've got the right people in place, you've got the venue, like Natalie mentioned, it doesn't even have to be a venue per se. You can even use your offices if you've got a suitable office space as well, so you can cut costs there. So they can be amazing. Webcasts look brilliant when they're done well. I would just only commit to that as your first one if you have done the preparation. That would be the key point I would take away from that, for sure. But I would also say, to your point, Natalie, as well, is that webcasts and webinars complement each other. So I wouldn't always stick to doing the same style all of the time, depending on the topics, depending on the number of speakers, because, you know, throughout your seasonality, it kind of affects speaker availability as well. So I would think about that also. The other thing, and I feel like I'm almost pro webcast here, and I don't know why, but I'm just thinking.
I love like the two like options.
And you can also do this with webinars, actually, so I don't know why I'm just saying it for webcasts, but you can pre-record the entire thing depending on how topical and current the subject is that you're discussing. You can pre-record everything. And that gives you the option to edit things, make sure that it looks slick. You might not feel confident on the day, the speakers might not feel confident, so you might want to give yourselves a little bit extra time to fill up things not live. But there are platforms on the market that can let you then play out the recording after you've edited and polished it to look live, and your audience would be none the wiser. We call them semi-live events here, but people also call them scheduled replays. So there's those options as well. So I think that it's obviously, this has came off the back of probably an overwhelming meeting internally where there's been lots of ideas thrown around, and this person, as we've said, is a little bit overwhelmed. But with the right research and the right preparation, you can nail a webinar or a webcast in the style of a TED Talk. It's just how you want to go about the planning and logistics, I think.
Would you say as well for like that TED Talk style webcast, Rachel, that you need more than just one person to run it, kind of thing? Would you need a team to do that?
What do you mean, run it?
Like everything, really. Like,
do you mean
speakers? Speakers will not be a part of the production value, but like for that, what they're talking about in that example, would you say, yeah, you're going to need a team to run that kind of thing?
It's an interesting question, because I would say it depends what you mean by definition of team, I guess, because if you're internal, it depends if you've got an internal team in place with that skill set already. In terms of the actual setting up, in terms of the cameras, the sourcing of the speakers, is that going to be the same person? Probably not, because but I guess this one as well is this person just working on their own, or are they part of a bigger team that can assist as well? Sounds like the latter, in fairness, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is why if you were on your own, and you did have to go down this route, I would consider like an agency or a project management or cough, cough, something like Workcast, because we have a team that can actually help with the delivery. We can come on site, so on and so forth. But yeah,
where's
I would. If you're a one man team, you 100% would need assistance without a shadow of a doubt to deliver an event like that. I thought you were going to ask Chris how many cameras should be used.
That's a really good question as well. We'll set you on up for that one, Rachel. How many cameras should be used?
Yeah, I would.
One overhead, two side ones.
So we multi-camera webcasts always look way better. But it also depends on audience. If you don't have a large audience in person, multi-camera might be a bit overkill. You could just maybe do it with one or two.
Yeah, we
should have a panel discussion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think it's good to almost get like little close-ups of the speakers. I think at that point, if you don't have an audience, but you are still doing a panel discussion and maybe getting Q&A from your online audience, mm-hmm. I think multi-camera at that point is good.
Yes, I agree.
When we were recording podcasts, we switched to like from just typical like what we're doing now with like me and my colleague. So we would then basically like speak to an influencer over like what we're doing now through like webcams.
Yeah, but it was colleague. This was in the past.
Oh yeah, past. Yeah, yeah. Like yeah. Yeah. For reference to everyone, this was like about 6-7 years ago. We started out with just like speaking through webcams with these different influencers in health and fitness. And then we decided to do like a webcast style podcast where we went there with a one camera setup, recorded the whole thing. And then ultimately we then switched to a multi-camera setup. So there would be one facing me and my colleague who we're interviewing, and then one on the primary speaker. And we noticed that there was a lot more people watched the full presentation when it was multi-camera than they would when it was just a single one. I think it was due to the fact that maybe the audience was getting a little bored of just like the one static image. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so now when I'm watching people replicate that online now, they have a very similar like setup where they do the multi-camera. And I think it's just to do with a lot of the audience's visual. They don't want the audience to get bored through a one camera take. So yeah, that's just my two cents on it.
No, I would definitely agree. It's engagement, isn't it, at the end of the day? And the engagement adds to the value that you provide in the audience. That's the main thing.
Great. So I guess to almost like answer this person's question, I think if it's the first webinar you're running, if you don't have a team to support you, but your VPs are adamant that they want the TED Talk style, we'd almost recommend either finding a platform that has support there for you to utilize, or find an agency to help you run this, almost outsource a little bit of that to take the burden off your shoulders a little bit. Mm-hmm. If you are able to sway them maybe to a simpler style, I think we would maybe recommend going straight up webinar for your first one. But again, as Rachel said, research. There'll be loads of case studies out there to help you. There's been so many webinars run now since 2020 that there's a lot of examples out there for you to learn from and almost learn from other people's mistakes, which I think is quite good. Mm-hmm. So I think that's our recommendation for that. But to answer their first question, well, one of their points, should they be standing or sitting? Nobody cares.
Didn't even ask that. We didn't answer that, did we?
We didn't. I think my response is I don't think anyone cares. It's definitely all about the content. Would you agree? We're all sitting now.
True. I mean, I could stand if you want.
You'd have to hold your laptop with you. And
it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because
do you think it just depends on the presenter's comfort, really?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, if you're doing a webinar conference call, they're going to be sitting down. It would be odd if I started standing up and walking around right now. That would be a little bit odd.
Take a turn with me.
Oh, let's go. But if you're doing a TED Talk and it's a webcast format, then I think there's argument for both. We've done the most recent physical conference that we spoke at. We had three panelists sitting down, and I actually chaired the event, and I was at a lectern. and I was standing up.
So it could be mixed.
But it was just the way that the space was. That was a multi-camera setup, that event, actually, because it was streamed online. So, yeah, it just depends on what people are comfortable with. I feel like a lot of people more relaxed now, and they do like to sit down, and it's almost like interview style.
Definitely more of a chat.
Yeah.
Rather than stiff.
I think it depends on your audience as well. So if you could you imagine like Tony Robbins doing an event to his audience where he's just sitting down, like his presence is standing up, moving around, getting energy flowing. So it depends on your audience, I think, and like what you're trying to like gather from them. So if you want your audience to really sit and like listen to the presentation, you should be sitting.
Yeah.
If you want your audience to be like up engaged.
Like, are you talking stats or are you, or is it an open conversation? Is it quantitative? Is it qualitative?
There's various different things you can go down. It's a good question, actually, if the audio, if you is your audio presenter like standing or sitting. It's a really good question to ask, and I think it does depend on your audience, like what you're trying to get from them. If you're a CEO delivering a presentation to the company, do you want to kind of energize them? Do you want to like probably ramp them up for like next year? And maybe you should be like walking around and like just getting like the energy built up in the room. Or if you are just like delivering like research and something that's kind of mellow tone, then yeah, maybe just stick with like sitting down.
I'm so glad you've actually gone into that a little bit more, because body language. So important, just like what you're saying there, Chris, like how do you want the person listening to you to feel? Now we all know that like speaking is just one way of delivering that message, but how you carry yourself will also help you deliver that message. And as you said, like sometimes when you're standing, you can feel a little bit more confident. Like me, I don't know if you can see, I use my hands quite a lot when I talk. And a lot of it is about like facial expression. Like, are you actually engaged with what you're saying? Or are you just sort of sitting like this and just reading out in a very slow, quiet voice? Like, it doesn't have the same effect. Do you know what I mean? Like, your face is instantly making you laugh. Love it. Great. So that almost like answers that element. But I think the final two things I really want to touch on to hopefully help this person out or anyone else who has maybe not done a webinar for the first time, which I think is almost like a bit strange to say, because I feel like a lot of people these days think that everyone does webinars now after like the boom that was 2020. It's like, oh, like I've already done them. I've done like 20. But there are still people out there in loads of businesses who maybe aren't utilizing them yet.
Yeah.
And so it is still a bit scary for them. So what I want from both of you is I'd like to know a tip for someone running their first webinar that is an absolute must and a mistake to avoid.
Oh, that's a really good question, that.
And that could be our ending note.
Rehearsal. Technical check.
Offer anything for me?
I would say define your objectives for what you want and get out of it. Like, see if you can understand your goals for like running webinars, and speak to the teams who are going to be involved in it. So, say if you're in sales and you want this webinar to be a big hit for your lead gen, speak to your marketing team, help them with the promotion element of it all. So, yeah, bringing people on board, get their advice, just overall, just yeah. To try and get as much information as you possibly can. That's what I would say.
I'm trying to think of a mistake to avoid. It's something really, really simple, but lighting. Make sure your lighting works. Well, not works, but is good, because there's nothing worse than just seeing a dark silhouette. It's a little bit creepy, but it doesn't look great. Really simple mistake. There's so many more, but that one I think is the big one.
Sorry, you go, Hopper.
I was just gonna say check your equipment as well. That kind of led us onto that one, Rich. Just like to make sure like you're not like 10 minutes beforehand noticing that your mic's not working. So like maybe like a day before or two days, just make sure everything's in check. Jump onto the platform, like make sure you know how to get in there and upload your presentation or whatever you need to do. And ultimately that will help you be a lot more like relaxed going into the presentation, which will help you deliver your content a lot more effectively.
What's a mistake for you, Natalie?
I think I've got one, a mistake. So it's not necessarily a mistake. I think it's more of a quality thing. But I would say audio. So like your mic, kind of what Hopper was saying, but I think it's more the quality of the mic and the audio that it delivers for your audience. So say, for example, we're all using headsets right now because we all have microphones inbuilt. And I think all of us have some level of noise reduction from the environment. But I do see a lot of presenters who either will be using their laptop mic or they'll be using AirPods or something like that. And they're not the best at minimizing noise around you. And I think there's been some research done that some people can forgive a grainy image, but if the audio is good, it does help eliminate that for them. So it's like, as long as the audio is good, they're more likely to stay and listen because it's less grating for them. So I'd say keep an eye out for that. And then a tip from your first webinar, I'd definitely say just make use of your content afterwards.
Yes.
So as you said, it's a lot of effort to put into it. Just do something with it afterwards as well, whether you're creating a blog and making some short snippets, something like that, or putting it into like a library or uploading it somewhere so you can keep using it for nurture purposes.
Yeah. Use AI on it. Mm-hmm. Go wild. Mm-hmm. I think the one other thing that I would say, sorry, Hopper, you go.
No, no worries.
I was just say if you
you're so polite here. I love
it. If you have multiple speakers and you do a tech check prior to the event date, replicate exactly what your on-day scenario will be, because you don't want them to be at home having a really good setup during the technical check, and on the day of the event, you find out that they're actually going to be broadcasting from a Costa coffee in the middle of London, where it's noise pollution. Oh, the Wi-Fi is not the greatest because it's not really a good replication from the test. So, yeah, that's just another tip.
That's a solid tip, Ad. That's a really good tip. Something a bit out of the box for them, because I'm focusing a lot more on the content, and is that if it's your very first one, you might actually forget about your audience. You'll forget that there is people on there who is watching you deliver this, and ultimately you might neglect them. So if they're putting in questions, you might even forget about them, because you might just be so nervous and just be like focusing directly on the screen and like your presentation, making sure everything's okay, that you neglect like the interactive elements, which ultimately can like result in maybe a passive and disengaged audience, really. So it's not the best way to like start that relationship with your webinar attendees. So focus, like just check in on like any questions being asked and stuff like that, or making sure like you say answer. If you're putting out a poll, reflect that. Like say, oh, I've noticed 60% of people are looking into this kind of thing. So yeah, bringing that, making sure like your audience is kind of part of the webinar can really help you. So yeah, don't neglect your audience.
Yeah, I agree. It's very, very, very good point. Didn't even think of that, but yes.
No, definitely. It's almost like what you're saying. Also, like deliver what you say you're going to deliver.
I can be guilty of going off on a tangent.
At least like we're humble, we know.
Because you get so caught up in the moment. I think we're fine on webinars now, I would say, but when I first ever did a talk physically, that it's quite overwhelming because you have the audience eyes on you as well. So that was a little bit nerve-wracking, but definitely a good point.
At least on a webinar or webcast, you don't see them.
Yeah, no.
But almost like sometimes that's worse, because you're like, oh my God, I can't see if they're reacting well to like what I'm saying. If you're trying to bring in a bit of humor, you're like, oh my God.
And it depends on what platform you're using as well, because some platforms do allow attendees on. They're allowed their audio, they're allowed their microphones. So actually that's another good point for this webinar. You have to do research on the provider that you're going to use to stream the event as well.
Yes.
Because different platforms will provide different outcomes. So that's another thing to bear in mind.
Because there will definitely be some platforms who specialize, as you said, Rachel, in like almost that interaction. If you want your audience to be able to take part in like a audible kind of visual way. But there'll be other platforms that specialize in just the presentation style, but getting the engagement in a Q&A polls, as Chris, you've said, way, because there are some people who just don't want, they want, not that they don't want their audience to be involved, they want to monitor their involvement. To make sure that nothing silly comes through, or they're hijacked and unprepared for it.
And there are platforms that can get hijacked, so be careful.
Oh, the glasses. Be careful about them. I think that's a good place to wrap. I think we've answered that question. If anyone has any thoughts on this, you can leave them in the Q&A.
Yes.
At the side of this webinar. But we will be back with episode 5 soon. We are to pick a question. But if you have any questions that you'd like us to answer, also put them in the Q&A and we will answer it for you. Or I might actually send it out an email and find out what people want us to answer.
Good.
But as per, thank you both for joining me. It's been wonderful.
And thank you.
No, you're welcome.
Hostess. You are a great host.
Oh, thank you. I love the feedback. And I'll see you both on the next one.
Okay, bye. Thanks, everyone.
Bye.